Good morning and welcome, welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenhoff coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join our conversation, call or text at the same number, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Or if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter, you can leave a comment there as well. We are really delighted to be joined by John Dietrich, is an investigative reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Good morning, John. Thank you for joining us. I think this is visit number 3 or 4.
Good morning, Jane. Glad to be here.
Let's start, first of all, John, with about the series, your investigative series in the Journal Sentinel, which kind of led to the meeting that was last week in Wausau. But let's talk about your series, first of all, about guns in Wisconsin and gun deaths in Wisconsin.
Yeah, so this project, which was done through Marquette University's O'Brien Fellowship in Public Service Journalism, and as you said, published in the Journal Sentinel, what we looked at was the full extent of gun deaths. And what we learned as we got into this was that if you don't include suicides, you miss a big part of the picture, that in fact, 71% of gun deaths in Wisconsin are suicide. And so not to diminish other kinds of gun deaths, homicide and so forth, but it's really important to get the full picture. And through this reporting, what I really leaned into was particularly those who are most deeply affected by this, people in gun communities and so forth. And it was interesting to me as I got into it about efforts among and in those communities to address this that I was not aware of, that was a big part of this series. And again, just what we were trying to do is behind the gun, the idea was to sort of see the person first, see the humanity of people. And we tried to do that in a number of ways and just how we framed the stories, language, and so forth.
This is a pervasive problem, tragically. And I would think, especially in rural areas, I don't know if gun ownership is more prevalent in rural areas, but I certainly know that farmer suicides have been on the rise, and this is not just a Wisconsin problem, it's a nationwide problem.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it's important to note that the presence of a firearm does not connote, you know, mental health issues or crisis. In fact, the data would suggest that people experience, gun owners and non-gun owners, experience these kinds of events at the same rate. The difference is that it's the access to lethal means. And so so when you think about the research that says, you know, that you have sort of an event that might come up or it could be prolonged loneliness and things of that nature. And then you add in something like alcohol. And then if there's lethal means, particularly firearms, that's sort of that triangle of lethality. And it is, we found the numbers were higher in rural areas. And in fact, when you adjust for population and suicide, Milwaukee is in the top 10, but there are a number of counties that are have slightly higher rates. And that was a surprise. And this isn't just a Wisconsin issue, as you point out. This is happening other places as well. And it is, as I found, of great concern among gun owners. And that was again sort of a surprise to me, but into to our readers as well.
So, what are some of the measures that have been taken to try and help out people who might be in a crisis and they have weapons, and for right now they probably shouldn't have these weapons?
Yeah. So it turns out that there's a longstanding practice among firearms owners to, you know, hold firearms for each other in times of distress. Just the phrase is known as hold my guns. And, you know, this happens really without notice, probably detection. And it's been going on for a long time. And in fact, it wasn't really in the research, which sort of makes sense because, you know, as I've talked to researchers, many of them who do work in this area do not own firearms. So they're not aware of kind of what happens in that community.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. And not like throwing shade on them. It's just something that they didn't sort of know. And Kathy Barber from Harvard, who was doing some work in Utah on suicide prevention, that's where she learned about it from other gun owners. And she didn't know that. So that's a practice that's gone on for a long time. There's also an effort called the Gunshop Project, which started in New Hampshire and now has spread. It's a grassroots effort. It does not involve the government at all. It's all voluntary, but it's what it is basically gun shops that want to be better about informing their staff about signs of prevent suicide and to deny sales when there are issues that might indicate that somebody wants to hurt themselves or kill themselves with that with a firearm. There also is an effort by these gun shops to be able to hold firearms for people who are of a mind to be able to bring in a firearm. And again, that's a big thing. So you have to have somebody who is like, you know, sort of aware enough of their situation. But family could be involved in that as well, you know? And so that's another component that's happening in this area. And then there's also an effort, and this came out in the event, was just the effort to be able to normalize going to get help and talk to somebody in the mental health space. And, you know, this is not just for firearms owners. This is like, I think everybody, it's becoming more normalized, but it still has a stigma, you know, around it, less so than probably last year or 10 years ago, but maybe it'll be less in the time to come. But there is a concern among gun owners that just coming to talk about anything related to mental health would put their firearms in jeopardy, like ownership of them. And so I think it's this space. And this one of the groups that was represented on Thursday night was a group that's trying to bridge that gap to create more cultural competency, to use a term that we maybe hear in different contexts, cultural competency around and with therapists about gun owners. As they build cultural competency in other groups, understand that, you know, maybe as many as half of your clients are gun owners, and to be able to speak in a way that doesn't sort of, quote, step in it, you know, and sure, sort of like be alienated and so forth is really important.
You know, you speak about like the difficulty of having the conversation with, say, a therapist. I mean, like just the conversation we're having now, I can't imagine how difficult it is, because you're asking people of all backgrounds to come together and talk about it. Because in this country, if you even bring up guns, you're going to have people step back and go, you're not taking my guns. And some people who are screaming too loud, not understanding the point and the plight of those who are living out there and had guns their entire life, hunting, whatever it may be. I mean, how do you even approach the situation to say, all right, I need experts, I need your help, you need to come with me to have this conversation, to welcome others into it and make them feel safe, honestly? Like it's a well-worn term, but a safe space to talk about this topic.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Greg. So one of the things I think that matters is talking, you know, gun owners talking to gun owners is an important dynamic. It's not the only one, but it's an important one, because when things are said from gun owner to gun owner, it just lands differently.
Sure.
It lands differently. And that's kind of what we're going for with this event. The other thing is that there was a physician from the UW Medical School who came, Jim Bigham, who has pioneered a program that helps med students increase their cultural competency, because these are going to be ER docs and family docs and so forth, who are going to talk to their patients, who again are statistically going to be about half gun owners. And if they're talking about different risk factors, this would be one of the things that you want to talk about. Do you have firearms? Where are you storing them? You know, it's in a way that's sort of natural as they talk about other risk factors. He brought up something really interesting on Thursday. He said, think about, he was just using the analogy of the eclipse that we just went through. He said, when you just looked at the sun at the time, that even at full eclipse here in Wisconsin, you couldn't really see what was going on without the glasses and so forth.
Sure.
It's because there's so much brightness. And that's kind of, he was saying, I think that's true with guns. Like there's so much heat just bringing it up from all sides that, and I do see it from all sides. When I bring up what I'm working on project-wise, whether it be people who are on sort of the left and the right, and I try not to think of just in dichotomous terms, but sort of go in that side, I sort of hear certain things, and it's because I think the emotion comes out, and it's hard to talk about this with all the light and heat around the issue. You can't sort of see what's happening in that eclipse because of the light. I just thought that was a really interesting approach, and that's why we tried to try to use invitational language and language that was that would be free, really try as much as possible free of any kind of even unconscious shaming or judgment, but talk about, hey, this is an issue for people of goodwill. Let's assume that, and let's lean into this. And I think there's more consensus to talk about this than maybe appears to be. That's at least been my experience.
John Dietrich is our guest. He is an investigative reporter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and did an incredible series about guns and mental health. And they recently held a meeting in Wausau. We're going to get to that in a little bit. But Greg, you said we had a text.
We got a text. Also, I with that event too, I noticed that you said so quickly, like, this is a judgment-free zone. I think that's an important thing you're talking about. But we did get a text. They wanted to remain nameless on this, but they did say, I have had mental health crises in the past and agree I found someone to hold my guns until I was better. And
that's huge.
Frankly, I didn't know that was a thing, John, until you were on the show last time. And as someone who has struggled with mental health issues and someone who's been told by, and I'll be honest, has been told by therapists, psychiatrists, it's not a good idea for me to own guns. I've never even thought about that idea of just walking over to your neighbor's house and say, hey, I need you to hold these. Can you do it? And they're like, yep, I got you. You let me know when you're better. I mean, that's just, it's such a simple idea, but that never occurred to me that this is something that happens.
Well, but as again, we are not in those circles. And as John said too, you didn't know about that either until you started doing this reporting and, yeah, and looking into this further.
Yeah, that's right. And it's a common practice. I should also point out that in Wisconsin, because we don't have a universal background check, you can do that. In a state where there's a universal background check, that you can't do that. That's an unintended consequence of the universal background check system, because that's a transfer.
Interesting.
And so you would have to do a background check. And so again, that's one of those things that folks who maybe created that law or author it would not have seen that.
Yeah, and didn't take that into consideration. We're going to continue this conversation. You can always join us, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. Stay close. Coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvin, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can join our conversation. Call or text 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform Elon continues to actively ruin. Our guest is John Dietrich. He's an investigative reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Did a wonderful series on guns and mental health. And then last week, John, it was a meeting in Wausau called The Intersection of Firearms and Mental Health. So tell us a little bit about how that discussion went. I'm curious. I'm just curious who came and what they had to say.
Well, thank you for that. It was an interesting opportunity. So a lot of times in projects, we do sort of public events where sort of invite the public out. We did it in Wausau because a couple of our key sources in the series were from there. Debbie Trader, who founded Prevent Suicide Wisconsin, lifetime gun owner, family hunted long time, so forth. She's in Wausau. Jim Campbell, who's founded the Honor Flight up there and has been active in suicide prevention spaces, again, 30-year retired Marine and longtime gun owner. So we had some partners up there. It's also in the part of the state where we talked about where the percentage of gun deaths or suicide are very high. We invited, basically like recreated the event, the project almost. You know, I brought together all these people that I've been so blessed to speak with through this project. And this would be most of them people from Wisconsin. There's a couple people who came in from Nevada who are working on that Bridging the Gap But I have been able to talk to all these people. I did the honor to tell their story. And as a starting point, it was really special that they were all in the room together. And so it felt like it was a public event, but it also felt like almost a symposium of thought leaders in a new space. The connections were really beautiful because you could just see the ease. They knew some of each other's stories from the project. They hadn't been together. And we opened up with kind of a, there's a full-length video now out there that that we can share. But we had some very short introductory comments at the beginning. And then we went to sort of a traditional panel. Again, all for the most part, all seven of my, and I think there was one member of our panel who is not a gun owner. She's a researcher from the medical college. But just were able to get into some really deep waters, and I think surprising. And then in our audience, we had just a number of people from the project and others who came up with some really interesting issues. Charles Franklin was there. He's from Marquette.
Sure.
He helped us with our panel or with our poll. It was the largest poll of gun owners and their preferences and views in Wisconsin as part of the project. So we just had a really high quality number of people. You know, our overall number of people who sort of walked in the door was not high. And from our discussion, what we're talking about, that sort of makes sense. But that was the point of the video. Because
exactly.
If people might be concerned to come in, like, yep, that would be raising a red flag to go in there.
Yep.
Here you can watch the video other places.
Yeah.
There was also a discussion about maybe this is the beginning of something as opposed to like a capstone.
As you said, John, there was a video of the whole evening, and we're going to put that in our show notes after the show is over. Greg will make sure that gets up. So if people want to watch last week's event in Wausau, you'll be able to do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Eric from Wauwatosa is on the line. Thank you for your patience, Eric. Did you have a question or just a comment?
Yeah, for Mr. Dietrich. I'm sorry. I imagine this is all kind of like what, you know, I've heard over the years, something you would call a conspiracy of silence as far as suicides and gun deaths, and there's obviously a lot of shame in it and pain and all those sorts of things. But what I noticed over the years, and you are in the media, so this is a good opportunity to ask you this question, is two questions. One, if you could, in your research, did you look into and find out exactly what the number one demographic is by race for gun suicides? And then here in Wisconsin, nationwide, whatever. And then also being in the press, even on civic media here and in the newspapers and on, you know, the social media, whatever, you repeatedly see, you know, reports of homicides in Milwaukee, gun shootings. But you said yourself, I believe it's only 29% of all gun deaths. But you rarely hear about blankety blank, you know, suicides in Wausau, suicide in La Crosse. There was a multiple suicide in Manitowoc or something like that. So why do you think that shootings in the cities here in Milwaukee, it's always the buzzword, and Chicago nationwide is the buzzword, the shootings and all this. If it's only 29% of the shooting deaths, why is it that that's constantly on the news, and yet we're rarely hearing stories of suicides on the news about, you know, 71% of the gun deaths in this state and or this country? And why might you think that they don't report those as, you know, actively?
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate the question.
Yeah, thank you, Eric.
So a couple things. So I've been in the media for a long time. Mainstream media is often gets labeled. So I have a view into this. Well, first on the demographics. So if you look at the period of life, it depends. Suicide numbers and gun suicides. The largest category of gun suicides in Wisconsin is white men over the age of 40. And that goes up, that demographic gets larger and larger as you get older. That's not to diminish other categories, because there are, and also to be clear, this is not the only form of suicide. And I should say this right at the beginning. Also, if anybody hearing this is having any thoughts of suicide, call 988.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's the helpline. So we always want to emphasize that. But it is a disproportionate, even given the size of that demographic, and it gets higher, over the age of 75, white men is the largest category. And again, given the age, and as you said, the shame factor and so forth, that often just does not talk about. People don't, they don't even maybe have a funeral. It's not even known. It's not mentioned in the obituaries and so forth. And to your question, why that is, this is a conundrum that we have faced, I think, in the media for a long time. A friend of mine who I interviewed for the project, he said The problem, John, is that you guys emphasize the unusual and you suppress the usual. And so you give people the impression that the unusual is usual and vice versa. But it's like, it's such a telling thing, even as I repeat it now, because it is true. It gives, and what people perceive becomes reality. And the reason we haven't written about suicide is because of ideation and the contagion factor, that the idea that you write about particular acts, if they don't happen in public, it's considered sort of a privacy thing. But there is this conspiracy, as Eric pointed out, if it's not deliberate, and I don't think it is. It is a silence that it contributes and people don't know. And even in among, and it maybe especially in the gun culture, that was what stood out to some of the people I talked to, is they said this would happen at gun shows. And people would like be an exhibitor one year and they'd just be gone the next year. Like, what happened? Same thing with farmers and so forth. Like, what happened to that guy? And it was just kind of hushed tones and so forth. And I think for a long time, we've sort of been reluctant to write about that because of the concern about, you know, that would give people other ideas, or that somehow a private thing or whatever. And again, that is not to diminish what happened in Milwaukee and homicide. It's both and.
But we're starting the discussion, which is wonderful. That's what this is all about. 988, mm-hmm. As John said, if you are having any kind of suicidal ideation, please reach out for help. Help is available. I hope you keep doing what you do, John. Would love to have you back anytime. We will put all those links in the show notes so you can watch the video. John Dietrich, investigative reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thank you so very much, John.
Thanks, Shane. My pleasure.
Take care and stay with us. News is coming up next, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, the Calvinator on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join our conversation, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. She joins us every Wednesday at this time, no matter what crises is going on yeah. in her own life. Dr. Laura Hanks is here for our public service announcement. You've had quite a month, Dr. Hanks.
Boy,
just personally. So right before we went on the air, you shared a picture of me of one of your kids. So for people who don't know this, a couple of weeks ago, you had pink eye. You personally mm-hmm. had pink eye. At the same time that one of your kids came home with head lice. And then yep. the whole family had to deal with head lice. And now one of your children has what?
Hand, foot, and mouth disease.
I'm going to remain respectful to your child for one thing. I saw the picture. My heart just explodes with sadness for your child.
Poor munchkin.
But that also sounds like I got hit. It's well, gross. Yes, definitely gross. But it sounds like an 18th century thing. Like it's not something that. My parents are familiar with it. But as far as like me, I'm like, that's a thing that still yeah. happens.
It sounds like an equine. It sounds like a horse problem. It sounds yeah. like a horse issue.
I know. It's like, I hadn't thought about it either. And you know what I'm realizing is he's the same age as my oldest one when COVID happened. So like, he's at the age where he's just getting
everything
from yeah. daycare. And she was at home because of the COVID restrictions. So she like, never got sick for a year and a half, and we were actually really worried about her immune system.
I bet
she like, didn't even have sniffles when
we
she
just
was
pushed her into a pile of mud. Just
right, I know.
Go lick some doorknobs, kid. Go get sick.
Yeah. So it almost feels like our first time around because we just like didn't really get exposed to all these like daycare funness things. But hand, foot, and mouth, it's first of all super gross. It's caused by the Coxsackie virus, so it's a viral thing that is spread by respiratory droplets. So, you know, kids have their hands in their mouths and
touch things.
So we knew that he had been exposed to daycare on Thursday, and we're in, and our daycare person is great. And she was like, he barely even saw this other kid. I'm really not worried, but it's so contagious. And just because kids are so handsy, you know,
sure.
So he had this super high fever on Sunday night, like enough that it scared me to take him to the ER. Cause I was like, oh my gosh, this is something else. But that's what happened. They get this super high fever, and then as we're in there, these spots just start, like, they pop up on the palms of their hands, soles of their feet, and then he's got it inside his cheeks, on his cheek, on the outside of his cheeks. It's just like a sad little dude.
Well, the picture looks like measles times five.
Right. You know? I know. I'm like, am I, you know, his fever's gone, and it's, you don't really do, it's just, you know, give them Tylenol for pain and
just let it go, work its course. Wait till you just have to wait till it goes away.
Yeah. And just, you know, I generally, kids are the ones that get it. So I know my sister who works as a kindergarten teacher has gotten it twice. So she's like, please stay away, because it's pretty miserable if you get it as an adult.
That's the thing, is you describe it as like a child getting it, you're like, oh, of course. Yeah, I've seen children. They put their hands in their mouth all the time. They're always running around. Right. But when an adult gets, you're like, why is your hand in your mouth? Stop touching things. You're an adult. Pay taxes. Get a job. I don't know.
I'll tell you said that.
Jane Matinair said that. I'm Matinair on air.
Yeah. Don't lay that one on me. So does it really, he just has to wait until the spots go away?
Yeah. And that's the hard part, is that, like, I've had a really hard time trying to get somebody to say recommendations of when it's not contagious. Cause I've talked to the pediatrician, talked to the ER doctor. Of course I, you know, look at the CDC, and generally they say you're not supposed to have, like, I mean, this is kind of like, no duh, like an open wound, like a fever.
Hold on. Let me write that down. Let me write that down real quick.
No open wounds.
Don't lick lampposts. All right.
It's not that hard to be a doctor. So we're just kind of waiting it out. He's just kind of just a sad pup, and he's been getting more blisters. So
that poor kid.
If a child, or I mean, I don't know if the length of an infection is different between between adult and child, but what is from, you know, the first noticing to, like, all right, we're good to go, he can go back out in the world. Is there a time frame you can look forward to, like 2 weeks, 1 week, a couple days, a month?
CDC says 7 to 10 days.
Okay.
But, like, again, no one really wants to comment on how long it's contagious for. And I think that's because it's probably contagious a lot longer than we want to admit.
Oh, man.
Like, weeks. So, I don't know. And I don't think anyone really knows. But, yeah, the fevers don't last very long. This time and the last time he got it, it's just a day or two. So, but it's like the spots can stay around for a while, which is like, everyone's like, ooh.
And I mean, viruses, obviously we're surrounded by viruses. Viruses are all over the place. So this is just something that's floating around, and it attaches to the right person. Lucky you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like you said, like a lot of adults probably have it on their hand, you know, like touch something, and then like, we don't get, I know. Yeah, so, you know,
wash your hands, folks.
Exactly. Wash your hands.
Keep your liberal agenda to yourself, Jane.
Don't tell me what to do.
Don't tell me what to do.
Next.
Yeah.
Fine. Don't wash your hands. Dr. Laura Hanks is here for our public cervix announcement. If you ever have a medical question, it doesn't have to be OBGYN related, but obviously that is your specialty. But if you ever have a question, you can always email that to janesays@civicmedia.us. janesays@civicmedia.us. Of course, all the complaints about the show go to Kelvin. We're gonna switch gears a little bit, Dr. Hanks, and talk about this article in the New York Times. And the headline says, "The pill makes some women miserable, but are they really quitting it en masse?"
Yeah.
So there's all these videos, what, on Instagram and stuff, and all these women are, what, burning their birth control pills now?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've talked a little bit about the Instagram and TikTok and how you know, the recent study showed that only 7% of it is actual, comes from medical professionals right now. So again, you got to take this stuff with a grain of salt, but birth control, if that is something that you are interested in, there is not a magic pill or a magic form of birth control for everyone. You know, everyone, like, there are going to be, I a lot of times talk about like a Goldilocks situation with my patients about sometimes you have to try something and it does, and you find out it doesn't work for you, and then you need to try something else. So it's a very, as with everything with health with patients with uteruses, it's a very nuanced discussion. And I would agree to some extent the pill might not be right for a lot of people. And then it's important to know that there's two different kinds of birth control pills. Right now, there's one with estrogen and progesterone in it, and then there's one with progesterone alone. So you may have heard of the O-pill that you can get online now. That's a progesterone-only pill, which is a great option for patients. The reason that progesterone-only is okay to, you know, get online and not see a doctor is because pills that have estrogen in it do have a little bit increased risk for blood clots. So it's important to talk to your doctor if you have a history of high blood pressure, if you have a history of blood clots in yourself or your family, if you have a history of migraines with aura. A lot of people don't know that. That can increase your risk of blood clot if you're on estrogen, or if you're over 35 and you smoke. So I have definitely had patients that have been on birth control pills with estrogen for years and years, and they come in and say, and you know, we're going through things, and I'm like, hey, your blood pressure is kind of high. And they're like, oh yeah, I get treated for that. I'm like, well, you really shouldn't be on this.
Well, yeah.
So, you know, having that, you know, that's why it's important to see a doctor for that particular pill. Whereas the progesterone only doesn't have that risk.
Can we also not look for diagnoses from doctors of Instagram? That just seems like a really, really bad idea to me. You know, that, yep. I have 75 million followers because I do makeup tutorials, and now I can tell you how to perform brain surgery.
Let me tell you about kidney health.
Right. Yeah. And I think that, you know, getting it's frustrating because it's a platform, right? So I think that it can be used for good and be used for bad. But I think that, okay, so your birth control pill doesn't work. There are other options. There's other, like, even better options, in my opinion, than the pill if you're truly looking to not get pregnant. The IUD, the Nexplanon, are kind of the best things we have on the market in terms of long-acting reversible contraception. So we call that LARC. The Nexplanon is the small rod. It's about the size of a matchstick. It goes underneath the skin on the in your arm. Can stay in for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Super great form of birth control. You set it and forget it. You know, you don't have to think about taking a pill every day. That's also progesterone only. And then the IUD, there's two different kinds. One that has copper. So if people don't want hormonal birth control, that's a great option. And then one that has progesterone in it. What's nice about the progesterone IUD is that a lot of people have either no periods or very light periods. So if bleeding is something that's concerning for you, that's a really great option. So it's really just like this conversation, you know, what are you looking for in a birth control? Like, what are your hopes and dreams? How long do you want it to last for? You know, and there's I could go on and on and on, and we can if you'd like, but.
But it's, well, what works best with your lifestyle, and do you plan on having kids down the road? And, you know, there's a number of things to take into consideration. So, as always, talk to your doctor, not your Instagram friend, about.
What if I have a doctor on Instagram, Jane?
Well, okay, that's a whole other category. Okay. A veterinarian I would not necessarily go to.
I mean, yeah.
Just for me.
They got paws, I got paws, whatever. I mean, it's fine. My wife is on the Nexplanon, and it's great. She loves it. It's, you know, I think this is the second time she's had it, like, replaced. We do not want to have children. So this is perfect for us, perfect for her, and she's gone through the various things, and I think that just makes sense for. I mean, that's an applicable idea for everyone. As someone who's taken medication, you know, I had to find the medication that was right for me. And some things would make me gain weight, some things would make me sleep too much, some things would just zap my absolute everything. Yeah. And you just have to find what works for you.
Cam from Nina texting in, listening in Green Bay on WGBW. The Biden administration is working on women's health initiatives for making sure that medicine for women, shocking, is tested on women. What are they thinking, Dr. Hanks?
So she's bringing up a very good point that I don't think a lot of people realize, is that a lot of studies that are done on medication were not, women were not included, because we have these hormonal changes, because we have periods every month. And so study researchers said, well, you know, this is something we can't control for, so we'll just all test all men. And I mean, not specifically for birth control, obviously that's like a little bit different, but a lot of other medications like your SSRIs and things like that, traditionally weren't, women were not included in a lot of those initial studies.
I'm postmenopausal. Like, why wasn't I included?
See, James, this is why we can't do this. The ladies get emotional, Jane. I know. The ladies get emotional.
It's crazy.
Give the guy the birth, give the guys the birth control. Let's see if it works. It's fine.
Well, that we're working on that too.
Well, that was one thing we had
way overdue.
We had preach. All right, please. We had talked about that male birth control with Dr. Lyerly a long time ago, and you know, one of the things that she brought up was the fact that it's great and they've been talking about it for a long time, but what version is going to be the mainstream version? Because you know, you can take the pill, you can IUD, Nexplanon. Women have all these options. Men can only, are they just going to have a pill? Will they have a cream? Will they have this? It's what will be best. And what can men remember to do then?
Well, there's that too. Oh, the responsibility.
At least painful too.
Just remember, don't put your hands in your mouth and don't touch stuff.
Dr. Laura Hanks is here for our public service announcement. If you have a question, 855-752-4842. Stay close. This is Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, the Calvinator on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. Join us. Call or text, same number, 855-752-4842, or leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and the platform that Elon continues to actively ruin. She joins us at 11:30 till 12 on every Wednesday. Dr. Laura Hanks is here with our public cervix announcement. And before we came on the air, Dr. Hanks, you told us in the chat that you ran into a fan over the weekend. What happened? Oh, do tell, do tell. We love unsolicited praise.
You guys, well, I gotta give a little bit of background. The great Dr. Lyerly came up in our conversation because I was visiting a friend for her, it was a birthday party, and her parents are in town and they live in Door County. So I've been messaging them a lot, telling them about this fabulous person I know running for Congress.
She is fabulous.
Yeah. And so I've been, you know, sending all the things. And so we were sitting at a table chatting about the great Dr. Lyerly. And one of the neighbors came up and said, oh, are you talking about Kristen Lyerly? I think she's so great. She used to do this podcast that I listen to all the time while I work at home. He's like, it's called Public Cervix Announcement. I just started laughing. I was like, so I guess you know that I had lice recently. And he was like, that's you?
Oh, wow. Oh, no. Dr. Hanks got busted.
I know. I was backing away at this point. I was like, yeah, I took over her show. And so that's you'll funny. Still listen. And even though, you know,
oh,
can't,
you have
still those shoes.
You have slipped in just beautifully. It's been absolutely seamless, Dr. Hanks. It really has. It's been great on our end. You're the one who's been dealing with everything else on your end with what you've got going on with at home.
It's a decision I made.
It's being a it's being a mom, right? It's being a mom.
Oh man, I can't even. I feel like, can we take them back? They're sick too much.
Send them back.
My husband often said, he's just like, when do you think their parents are going to be here?
Someone coming to get them.
Well, the gloves showed up.
Well, I'm just concerned that after he gets over the with the hand, foot, and mouth disease, good heavens, what's possible next?
I don't know. I'm so over this year. I don't know. I think we've done it all. Like, we, you know.
You covered a lot of stuff this year.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully we're done. I mean, I'm learning a lot about, I'm like reminding myself a lot, I guess, about diseases I had kind of forgotten about. So maybe it's good for my education or something.
I just imagine you're like, it was either a, really, when you found out about the hand, foot, and mouth, or just like, of course it is. Of course it's, you know.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know.
Well, I was concerned. He had like, he had a little bite on his leg. So I was like, oh my gosh, is this Lyme? Like, I was like, that would also be perfect.
Goodness. Oh, yeah.
Like, get Lyme disease. Yeah.
Well, and ticks are very active right now. And it sounds like it's going to be a really busy tick season. That's going to be something that we're going to be talking about. I know they're so creepy, but that's something that we all need to be aware of. And there's actually a place that wants you to mail in your ticks. I have so many questions about that.
I have one comment. Hard pass.
Well, first of all, if I squash it and then stick it in an envelope, is that going to be useful to you? And otherwise, you want me to catch a live tick and just put it in an envelope and throw it in the mail? Or do I get like a little teeny tiny chloroform ball and, you know, knock him out?
Clearly, Jane has thought too much about this.
That's like on par with the people that do the like stool samples, like when you mail in your stool, like, that's, you know what I mean?
That's how my friend found out. This was before celiac was like a commonly known thing. She found out she was for a long time losing weight. She was gray in the skin and no doctor. It was like, oh, you're just not eating the right food. Or just, like, it was a really bogus diagnosis. And then one day she found this lab in Texas. They're like, yeah, sure, send us your stool. And she's like, I mailed my poop to Texas last week. They said you have celiac and a bunch of other allergies. And so now she lives like a gluten-free, soy, like all the freeze.
But she's not gray anymore.
No, she's gaining weight. She's got color. She's healthy and happy. Wow. But every time some people talk about, like, my friend mailed her poop to Texas, and now she's alive.
Who knew?
Diagnostics in areas where you never necessarily expected.
Yeah.
We are going to talk hopefully next week, because this is something we've talked about off the air many times, and I would be curious what your experience has been like. My husband is adamant that he will never go to another male doctor ever again. He will only see female doctors, and I think Greg has said the same thing.
Yes.
We're gonna talk about that in the coming weeks. I'm really curious, not to diss all male doctors, but I think female doctors handle things differently than your male counterparts. Yeah.
You know, I mean, and we see that a lot in OBGYN patients are not, there's a portion of patients that are not comfortable having male doctors, especially with delivering babies. And, you know, we talk about that a lot with our obstetric patients, because we have males in our group who I'm obviously biased. I think they're fantastic.
Of course.
But, you know, just the way that our practice model works, it's that we, like, I can't come for all of my patients' deliveries. I never sleep. We rotate call.
Right.
So, you know, we talk to them about, like, it might be a male physician. And if you're not okay with that, we can help find another group. But, you know, I think that, and that's like a very specific for like OB because sure. of how that works.
Sure.
But like when you're finding your own doctor, I think it's hard because I know, you know, there's great doctors that are male, female, both sides. Mm-hmm. But as it always comes down to, it's who you're comfortable with. But I know a lot of both male and female doctors that I was in med school with that I would 100%
go to,
you know, have them operate on me. And yeah.
I mean, if you were operating on me, that's what it's more the GP thing, sitting down with me, talking to me in the room. We can talk about more next week. But honestly, Dr. Hanks, if you said, you know, my colleague Steve is going to do it, I'd be like, my first question would just be, is Steve cool? Like, and I mean that. I truly mean that. So we can talk about that more next week, but it's a thing. It really is a thing.
Dr. Laura Hanks, really appreciate you joining us, especially with everything you've going on. I can't wait to find out what's happening next week.
Who knows?
Take care of yourself. Dr. Laura Hanks has been our guest for public service announcement. Thank you so very much, Dr. Hanks. Thank you to Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers. Without you guys, nothing works. Thank you most of all to you for calling and texting and for listening. It means absolutely everything. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. News is coming up next. Stay right here. You're on the Civic Media Radio Network.